We're paying tribute to DMX's legacy. The cast of Glee honored the memory of former castmate Naya Rivera. And we're chatting about Taylor Swift releasing new recordings of her old albums with Ryan Schockett.
It's April 9th, 2021.
Hey friends, I'm Casey Rackham.
And I'm Stephen LeConte. Welcome to BuzzFeed Daily.
So we're starting with the extremely sad news that Earl Simmons, known by his stage name DMX, died earlier today. The rapper and actor was hospitalized in White Plains, New York on April 2nd after a heart attack, according to his attorney and friend, Murray Richman. TMZ reported the hospitalization was due to an overdose, and DMX had been open about his struggles with drug addiction, telling Billboard, quote, "I learned that I had to deal with the things that hurt me. I didn't really have anybody to talk to. In the hood, nobody wants to hear that. Talking about your problems is viewed as a sign of weakness when actually it's one of the bravest things you can do." DMX was known for his monster hits, X Gonna Give It To Ya and Party Up, Up In Here, which featured his unique barking style. During his career, he released 8 studio albums and was nominated 3 times for Grammy Awards, including Best Rap Album for his 3rd album, and then there was X. DMX's family released a statement to People magazine saying, quote, "Earl's music inspired countless fans across the world, and his iconic legacy will live on forever. We appreciate all of the love and support during this incredibly difficult time."
Meanwhile, last night the cast of Glee reunited to pay respect to actor Naya Rivera at the GLAAD Media Awards. The cast honored Rivera, who died in a tragic boating accident last July, by speaking about what she meant to each of them and the show. And co-star Demi Lovato had these words for her friend.
"I will always cherish the chance I got to play Naya's girlfriend Dani on Glee. The character Naya played, Santana Lopez, was groundbreaking for closeted queer girls like I was at the time. And her ambition and accomplishments inspired Latina women all over the world. That's the power of a show like Glee."
Rivera's mother, Yolanda Privatire, was also included in the broadcast and said, quote, "Naya would be honored to receive this recognition. Her desire was always to be an advocate for those who did not have a voice. I don't believe she realized how important she was to this world."
I think something that's really interesting about working at BuzzFeed, we do these things called Ad Yours, where you ask people, usually fans, about TV shows and movies, about like, what's one of your favorite queer characters, or, you know, any ranging questions like that. And it's interesting over the years to see how those answers change and for different age groups. Naya Rivera and her character on Glee was so important to queer girls. She had such an impact. It was one of... You hadn't seen a character like her that was so multifaceted. It really just goes to show how important she is. And I love that they honored her.
Yeah, you know, that scene in Glee where she comes out to her grandmother is such a powerful, emotional scene that I know means so much to so many people. I mean, nowadays we see a lot of scenes like that on television, but what we have to remember is at the time, that was absolutely groundbreaking television. I think one thing that I feel really sad about is that I think that Naya did not get to see her legacy fully appreciated. I don't know that she got to have this moment of understanding how much she meant to people. I hope she did, you know?
All right, moving on. Just today, Taylor Swift released a re-recorded version of her 2008 album, Fearless. This one dubbed Taylor's Version, and fans are completely here for it.
So to get deep into everything Taylor Swift and all the drama around her re-recording her old albums, we're chatting with BuzzFeed celebwriter and self-proclaimed Swiftie, Ryan Schockett. Hi, Ryan. Happy Fearless re-record release day.
Hi, happy Fearless re-record release day.
So let's start with a big question. Ryan, you, like me, are a big Taylor Swift fan. I know you could go on about this question forever, but can you just describe for me why you admire her so much? Like, where did this all begin for you?
I admire Taylor Swift for like countless reasons. She's just always an advocate of like writers and art and making sure artists, you know, get their due. But on a personal level, she's just like, you know, being closeted, you really look to the people that helped you get through these dark times in your life. And like, we have, you know, gays, we have our pop stars and like our singers, and Taylor Swift and her discography was always there for me during some of the hardest times of my life. And also she just like makes really great fucking music. You know, she makes, you know, pop songs, country songs, like folk songs. Like it's just, everything she makes to me sounds good. It's amazing. I love it.
Let's move on to why we're talking about her today. She's dropping her first full re-recorded album, Fearless. In the world of Taylor Swift fandom, what does this album represent?
This album represents the reclamation of Taylor Swift's art. She is taking it back from people who took it from her. She is clapping back in what I think is the smartest way she's ever clapped back. And she's really taking back what is hers. You know, she spent hours and hours writing these songs, winning awards for this album, and really putting her heart and soul into this, especially at such a young age. And it's really a shame that greedy men like Scooter Braun tried to take over this and, you know, make it something that it's not. And that's all about money and greed. And I'm happy she's taking it back and reclaiming the narrative. Not to use that buzzword that was, you know, from the Kanye scandal. The Swifties know what I'm talking about.
Ryan, I'm curious, like for you in Taylor's catalog of music, what does Fearless the album mean in the chronology of her albums? Where, like, what was happening in the Fearless era for Taylor?
So much was happening. So this was like one of Taylor's best public appeal eras. And it's also like where she was really reaching like critical acclaim. She won Album of the Year. She was writing these amazing songs, collaborating with artists like Kobe Calais. Her songwriting was really shining through during this era. You know, she had songs like Breathe and even Fearless, the title track, is just like, it's quintessential Taylor Swift. If the, you know, the debut album was obviously the introduction to Taylor Swift, the songwriter. Fearless was really the quintessential, like, nostalgic, capturing these small, minute details that happen in every relationship or happen when you first meet someone. And she was really putting them, you know, on paper and, you know, releasing them into the world, and people were really latching onto her music.
Well, we have much more to unpack about the new version of Fearless, which we're going to do right after the break. Welcome back. We're talking with Ryan Schockett about the Fearless re-release from Taylor Swift. Having these songs that are now in the range of like 10 to 15 years old gain new relevance, it's like this dose of instant nostalgia. But what do you think of the slight additions and changes and guest appearances that she's added to the original versions?
Well, first, I'm annoyed because I want to know who is telling Taylor Swift to cut these songs that she never added. It's probably Scott Bruschetta or like some dumb man, because these songs are so fucking good and they could have been hits. I mean, Fearless has enough hits and has enough songs that everyone knows by heart, but like these songs could have been topping the charts. They could have been at the end of TV shows or in the end of Grey's Anatomy. I know that they were just like telling her no or telling her cut this, or you have to worry about saying that. And I'm like, she needed people to tell her, no, put these songs out into the world. I don't care if it's a 25 song album, you know, like Put these songs out there. They are too good. I mean, the fans have already been listening to them because we were trading them on Tumblr years ago. Like, we've heard the shitty demos of them. Like, they should have been HQ, put on the album and released to the world.
Well, speaking of these songs that she cut and has now released in the new version, I want to know what you thought of the previously unreleased song, Mr. Perfectly Fine, that she left off Fearless originally, and which we obviously all know is about Joe Jonas.
I love it. I mean, it's amazing. How did that song get cut?
I was wondering the same thing, Ryan. I think it's incredible.
I think that person needs to be like held accountable for like not including that on Fearless, because it's like really a grave like transgression there.
Oh, Ryan, you like want names.
I want names. I want punishments. But yeah, I love Mr. Perfectly Fine. It's kind of like a mesh of like debut Taylor and Fearless Taylor. Like, it reminds me of like the songs like Permanent Marker and just like songs that you can feel her youth and some of her slight young messiness. you know, yes. like the, just the whole, like,
which I miss that slight young messiness. I'm glad it's back a little bit.
Yeah. Like the picture to burn, like, I'm going to like call you Mr. Perfectly Fine. You're going to get this little title that I created. It's so genius. Like, she's just been hanging on to this, like on her iPhone for all these years. It's just like, come on.
And then I'm just having the best time because how funny is it that, you know, Joe Jonas's wife, Sophie Turner, is like, hey, but this is a bop.
Yeah. I tweeted, I was like, she's going to literally listen to this song every time they get in a fight. She's actually going to listen to all of Fearless every time that Joe is like annoying. And she's going to be like, this is why Taylor wrote Forever and Always and like added it last minute because of you. You're the reason that we have Last Kiss, like every time they get in a fight.
Okay, so you already mentioned this a little bit, but for those who don't know, can you break down why she's doing these album re-recordings and releases?
Yeah, so basically, I'll keep it like simple. Taylor, when she was young, signed a contract with Scott Bruschetta, who's a greedy, greedy person now that we know. But when she signed it, she was super young, and after six records, she knew that the contract would be up. And she knew that Scott was going to sell her masters, which is basically that first recording of the song when she writes a song. Keep in mind, Taylor has written all of her own songs. So even though, you know, she signed it away to Scott, it is her art. She created each song. She's never, you know, had someone else write a song for her. She's always written them. So Scott then sold her masters to Scooter Braun, who Taylor has told us, everyone knows that Scooter has been shitty to Taylor Swift. He's in a picture with Justin Bieber bullying her online. He's just known as kind of like a sketchy guy in the music industry. Like, he's been accused of like paying off like Spotify or like, you know, engaging in kind of like sketchy activities with like his artists and getting them number ones. But Scott sold it to Scooter. And when that happened, Taylor was like, what the fuck? Like, you know that I don't like this person. Why would you sell, you know, the prize of my life, my art, to someone who's so shitty and someone who's bullied me? Like, imagine working that hard and then all of a sudden the person who hates you and has tried to like dismantle your success now owns one of your biggest, the biggest things in your life. So Scooter, after this happened, reached out to Taylor and was like, you can buy back your masters. Like, it'll be fine. You just have to like sign this NDA, which says like, you'll never talk about me or never talk shit about me. Or, and I'm not going to like show you any of like the business dealings. And she's like, no, like, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm not going to just, like, you may be able to pull fast ones on other people, but not me. So she said no. He then sold it to a group called the Shamrock Group or whatever. And the Shamrock Group is actually nice with Taylor. They're very professional and they cooperate with her. But part of the conditions to work together, they wanted her to still work with Scooter. And she's like, no, like, this is someone who has really tried to like dismantle my legacy. He's bullied me online. He's made a mockery of me. Like, when I was going through the hardest time in my career, like during that whole thing where Kanye and Kim lied with the edited video. And she was like, fuck this. So she re-recorded her music. And now she's taking total control of her legacy and her discography without letting him pocket any more dirty money.
So, you know, it's always kind of been a fun game to figure out which songs on her album are about which ex-boyfriend, etc. But on her latest albums, you also had the addition of which songs are about Scooter Braun. Do you think there are songs that are written about him or that hint at him?
I will say, I do think that Mad Woman on Folklore is about him.
Yeah, I Mad Woman is where my mind went to as well. I'm pretty sure that's about Scooter. I want to talk about not just how you and I feel about Taylor, because obviously we love her.
But I would die for Taylor Swift. I would give up like half of my family. I would die for her. I will fight for her. I have fought for her. I love her so much.
And just because I don't know how many listeners know Ryan, he's telling the truth. He really would fight for her.
Yeah, I'll fight for her.
I want to talk about like how you and I feel about her, but her public image in general. Clearly the pandemic has been like a very creative time for her. And it seems like she's entered almost a new era of her career. Do you feel like with everything that's happened, some of the Taylor hate has finally died down a little bit?
Yeah, because I'm so sick of these people who think their personality like can be hating Taylor Swift. Like, let's get some new material. Like, we get it. You think you're too cool to like her. We get it. But now that they're actually listening to, they're having the time to sit with her art and sit with her music and maybe delving into an album that they never normally would have given a chance, or watching a special like, you know, the Long Pond Studios that they never in a million years would have done. But because of quarantine, they have free time. They're really getting to appreciate her art, which is what they should have been doing all along. Because as like Swifties, we're like, hello, like we've known that she's a great songwriter, great artist, puts all this effort into her work, makes every release a huge deal. Like, we've known this. Welcome to the club. Let's get you caught up to speed here, you know?
Do you know what's actually really interesting is that you were talking about, you know, one of the reasons Taylor Swift means so much to you is like, you know, when you hadn't come out yet and she was getting you through difficult times. It's just like made me think about how music can really take you back to specific moments in your life. And now I do believe that Folklore will always take me back to the first year of the pandemic, that summer, with getting through depression, loneliness, sadness, and like just like it being a very cathartic experience. And I wonder if that's going to be true for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I like Folklore to me, like everyone says it too. It feels just like this warm hug from like a friend. And it really was there for us during that first year of the pandemic. I still like, I hear certain songs and it takes me back to where I was and how I was feeling. And even Evermore takes me back to like that second wave. It's a darker album. It's more sad, but it's, you know, we all were going through dark times then too. And Fearless almost seems as this like album that's coinciding with like the home stretch of the pandemic. People are getting vaccinated. It's this bright light, you know, we're getting re-recordings. Things are starting to return to normal, you know? And I love that her albums have done that, but they've been doing that for a lot of us for years. You know, certain people can associate certain albums with their college years or their high school years or when they had their first kiss. And I think that's really speaks to like how powerful Taylor's music is and like, you know, linking it with the nostalgia we all experienced, despite what age, you know?
Mm. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today. This was great.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for today. Come back and join us on Monday.
And remember, we're going to leave you with this beautiful advice about orchids and people that DMX said in a guest appearance on the sitcom Fresh Off the Boat.
I first started growing orchids. I thought they needed the most expensive soil and lights to blossom, and they died. That's when I realized that all they really needed was time and attention. You don't need to get your girl a gift. You need to give her your time.
BuzzFeed Daily is produced by Dan Bauza, Alan Haberchak, Julia Karen, and Erica Nedanine.
Special thanks to Tracy Ayers, Mangesh Atikadar, Samantha Hennig, and Tommy Wesley.
Be sure to subscribe to BuzzFeed Daily on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you go for your sound stories.
And please take the time to leave us a rating and a review. It helps us figure out what you like about the show versus what you love about the show. And remember to come back for more of what you love about BuzzFeed, coming to you daily.